Excellent Podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. If you are looking for something more specifically instructional, please do check out thehermitslamp.com and either look at the class recordings for previous material like the 8-week class on the Thoth deck or the class on reading numbered cards without people on them, or certainly do also look at the events tab for upcoming events. The majority of my classes are available for participation live, both online and in person in Toronto, as well as by recording, either audio or video, depending on the material. And now on with the podcast. So, this week I'm here with Kerry Paris, and we are going to be talking about community, art, reading the cards, and, you know, just generally what it is like to live and walk through the world with a spiritual awareness as we do the different aspects that inspire us and keep us engaged. So for the people who don't know you, Kerry, why don't you say a little bit about yourself?
A little bit about myself. Okay, I can try that. I first and foremost am a diviner, and that is the umbrella that I put myself under. And then branching off from there are different systems that I'm quite fascinated with that I can apply divination to. So, for example, tarot was my first form of divination, although I suspect that as a child I was always divining with rocks and shells and sticks and, you know, the river and the babbling brook. And beyond that, I've also created a deck with Roz Foster and Gabe Marihue called the Lenormand Revolution. So I'm quite fascinated with this whole Lenormand culture that's out there and the way that that divination speaks to the querent and myself. And so from that, another branch happened, and this is kind of how I live my life. I'm a Gemini, so I kind of jump from idea to idea, but it's all kind of linked somehow. And so I wanted to know how else I could incorporate this system of Lenormand into my life. And so I created a product called the Magpie Oracle. I think you might be familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And basically that's a kit with 36 shiny little charms that match the symbols from the 36 cards that you find in a traditional Lenormand deck. And that's been fantastic. It's been a lot of fun. It really helps people divine with less stress than they do normally with a deck of Lenormand cards for the first time, because you kind of go into this playful attitude with casting charms.
Mm-hmm. And strikes me that too, that the being 3D, the relationships between them, yes, are more pronounced in a way that, yeah, a series of cards laid flat on the table, you know, the relationships then start to get too intellectual, as opposed to like, hey, look, it looks like that thing's sitting on top of that other thing, or, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it really does help people get beyond the literal aspect of things, because again, with the 3D aspect that you're talking about, the brain, it triggers, you know, the synapses go off a little bit more quickly with a 3D object than a flat. And so I've talked about this with people before, that when, like, for example, if people are holding the anchor charm and the anchor card in a Lenormand deck, they can talk about the anchor charm right away. They just go into it. You know, it's like a toy almost. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when they start to read the card, you know, it's a different relationship, and it takes them a little bit longer, and there's a little bit more hesitation involved. So I tell people that it's their gateway. The Magpie Oracle is the gateway to the deck, if they want to use it that way, if they choose to use it that way. And it also allows people to kind of break the rules a little bit. And I'm kind of a rule breaker myself. You know, I've always been on the fringe. I've always lived in countercultures. So I'm comfortable, I guess, with that. And so, you know, there's a very set, somewhat dogmatic attitude around Lenormand reading with the cards. And so with the Magpie Oracle, it's just, you know, it kind of breaks that. It breaks people free from that. And it's not to say that they should never try to learn the system. I encourage that. But I also always encourage divine play. So that's been really fun. And then I also came out with a new product this year called Lenormand Lodestones. And those are magnets with Lenormand symbols on them that come in a tin that people can put casting sheets on. If you go to my website, you can always download casting sheets for the Magpie Oracle and Lenormand Lodestones. And so this is just another way of you know, playing and exploring this kind of Lenormand craze that has taken over the card-carrying world, the cardomantic world. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, and one of the things that I find fascinating, you know, watching you at move through the world is the way in which you are constantly kind of building community, you know, like the, you know, the Lenormand, the Magpie Oracle, you know, you're always coming out with new things for it. You're always coming out with new options. You're, you know, always kind of promoting and provoking conversation, not because you're looking for sales, you know. I mean, it's not like, hey, I've got a new thing for my old thing, give me money. It's like, hey, everybody who's excited about what I'm excited about, here's something new to think about, come on over and play with it, you know. I love that approach.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this before, you know, that community is so rich. You know, like you can divine with communities even without the community knowing about it. But when you invite them in to divine with you for like a community consciousness, you know, it's like building a community consciousness around, you know, helping somebody through something or helping a community find their way into something different or helping a certain community to evolve. You know, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like it. And so when you can provide a space for that and a tool that goes with that, yeah, sky's the limit. You know, there's some really great things that occur. And I love that. That's what I'm in this for. You know, I'm in it for the creative expression and not only the personal evolution, but a community evolution as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking earlier about, before we started recording, we were talking about how we learn, or how you can learn from everybody who's part of that community too. You know, I mean, people's questions, you know, the people that you're just meeting or who are just starting or people who are into different things, you know, they can open, at least for me, and I think for you too, they can open your eyes to stuff and your practice gets enriched by this sort of sharing and engaging as well.
Yeah, it's a win-win for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, every year I commit to some form of divination that will help me express who I am and learn who I am on a deeper level as a diviner. So this year, I decided to really kind of put to use my way of my spreads. Like, so this is with tarot, by the way. And, like I have a clientele that I read for annually, you know, I see them every month and in that, through those sessions, we're constantly building a piece of art around their, specific scenario or topic or information that comes through the reading. And so what I've kind of committed to do is to do that for everybody that I do a reading for. So rather than, you know, the people who are signed on for the annual sessions, I do it for people who come just one time now, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to my blog, you can see I actually did one on World Tarot Day that was just a few days ago, where I take somebody's question, I talk with them about it ahead of time, and then I go into this kind of therapeutic place where I build a mandala around their reading, and I bring it to life. You know, I bring the energy of that reading to life, and I send them a movie of that piece, and I have them watch it and work with it themselves. And I also take photographs of it so that they can put it up somewhere and use it as a sort of portal that will help them kind of enter their answer more artistically and more creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing that with community is the next step for me, not just, you know, these individual readings, but to do it with a group of people.
And do these people share their videos and things with other people in the group too? Or is it just, you're the kind of hub of it more?
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them do. Not all. I mean, you know, all readings are quite personal, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but some people, the most beautiful things that I really love are the people who receive a reading and it's because they're in struggle or conflict with somebody else. And so, you know, I build their mandala for them and then they send that to somebody, the person that they're in conflict with, to create peace. And that, you know, this, as a reader, that's such an honor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that's another example of how creativity can help not only, you know, your client evolve, but maybe the person that they're in scenario with or conflict with or, you know, confusion about, it kind of builds from there. And mm-hmm. who knows what happens for the other person?
Well, that's it. It just ripples outward, right?
Yeah, that's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that wasn't my conscious, you know, plan when I started these. I had no idea where they would go. But mm-hmm. it just felt right. You know, it just felt really right. And it's in alignment with who I am right now. So I have to honor that and do it. And, you know, whenever you do that, as you know, whenever you do that, good things occur.
Well, I love how much you're, you know, you're not being a selfish jerk and being like, I'm only going to do what I want. Right. You know, I mean, cause like I know a lot of artists, you know, and some of them are that way. Right. You know, they're so, you know, what's the word? Iconoclastic. They're just so like, they got to be themselves and that's it, you know? And if you either accept them or you're, you know, you accept them or you're wrong, you know, which is never fun to engage with. But I love the way in which you are authentic and really focused on what it is that you're doing and yet still open and engaged and not trying to control the process or, you know, like trying to define what it is for different people. Be like, well, this is my thing. And then you get to see what they do with that. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. I, you know, I live with an artist. I live with a painter and I grew up with a painter. And, you know, my brother's a painter. My father is a painter. My great-grandmother was a painter. You know, I've kind of always been exposed to art all my life. And the discussion around art and what an image means or doesn't mean, you know, there's a lot of critical thinking in my family. And so I witnessed a lot of emotion around imagery. So it was only a natural step for me to get into reading tarot for people who are emotional around imagery, right? Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, I kind of consider myself a card curator. You know, because I do like to see the authentic moments happen for people when they're considering or talking about how the imagery in the cards applies to their situation. And if I'm not letting that flow, then I am kind of one of those jerks that you're talking about where I'm trying to control the situation. And, you know, what's the use of that? Mm-hmm. I've been there. I've tried that, you know, in the earlier years, definitely. And, yeah, I've, I found out the hard way that that's not really the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting to me. So do you curate your clientele or do you limit your clientele? Like how do you decide who's going to come and work with you or do you, you know?
I do now. I didn't before. I went through a phase where, you know, when I was starting out and this was like 30 years ago where I would just take anybody, you know, because that's what I thought you did, you know. and then I went through a phase where I just did readings for women only.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't like the energy that was running between men and me, straight men and me. And then I, as I got older, you know, I'm in my 50s now, I find that I can easily, you know, hold my own in a lot of readings. And I seem to be attracting people who are artists. That seems to be the client base that I'm working with. But I'm considering something kind of different, and I'm not sure if I'll go with it, but this is just something that I've been playing with in my mind and doing a lot of readings around, by the way. And I kind of want to go back to like the day of like the guerrilla reading, you know, where you just kind of show up at a place and you do readings.
Uh-huh. A little cardboard sign.
Yeah.
Tarot readings by donation or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other part of it. It is by donation. Because I'm at a point in my career where I can feel secure about what I ask for my readings. But I wonder what it would be like if I just set up shop somewhere. And I've already talked to somebody in town and they're really open to this idea of just like doing tarot for tips or advice for tips or cards mm-hmm. or Magpie Oracle or just divination for tips. Just to see what that will do for me as a practitioner in this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just curious about it. So, and I'm not sure how I want to record this or, you know, me, I'll probably create some kind of artistic video out of it or, you know, do something mm-hmm. other than what I'm used to doing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how people relate to you when they don't know who you are, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like at the store here, I still get people although I'm 40, a lot of people think I'm 30, you know. And so people think that I'm young or, you know, inexperienced or whatever. And so I still get these people kind of coming in, the random people coming in kind of with this sort of testing attitude. But, you know, but I don't get as much of that as I used to.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of people who, you know, because I've been around for a while now doing this, but a lot of people, you know, when I was first starting, especially because I was reading for predominantly Caribbean clientele, you know, they're like, who is this guy who's working at this store? Like, he's uh-huh. here, so I guess we'll give him a try, but he better prove himself, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, I'd be really curious to see if you run into some of that or if, you know,
yeah.
if you, just your aura, you know, preempts it and people are like, oh, I got to know what you say, you know?
I wonder, yeah. And, I used to do a lot of psychic fairs, and I only do one fair a year now, and that's not even a psychic fair. It's called the Oregon Country Fair, and it's like the largest hippie gathering in the world, I think. It's fantastic. There's all these artisans there, and I have this booth there. And one of the things that I like about doing so many readings in a row for so many days is looking for the collective theme that comes up. So I want to, that's one of the things I want to try and invoke again, is just like, what is this collective theme that's trying to communicate and what does it want from me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And usually before everybody's reading, I do their numerology and I find out what their birth cards are and what annual year they're in.
Mm-hmm. In which system? Which way do you go about that?
I take the month and the date and I add those two and mm-hmm. then I get a total there. And then I take the year they were born and add it to that total. And then I get another total from that. You can find that in Angie Arian's book, The Tarot Handbook. You can find that in Mary Greer's book, Who Are You in the Tarot? I think what she's calling it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty accurate. It's been one of the most accurate systems I've ever used,
right.
And I love it. But what I was going to is that, like, for those readings at those fairs, I'll notice that, you know, all of these sevens show up. Or like when I was living in Santa Fe, I did a psychic fair, and all of these hierophants showed up, and I was like, what the hell's going on around here? Why are all these fives showing up? And as it turns out, there were a group of people that just came out of a halfway house. They were all hierophants.
I remember one day I was reading, and everybody, all five clients in one day, were all Scorpios. Wow. And they were all there about the problem in their relationship, which I don't remember exactly the quality of the problem, but it was all the same issue too, you know, different permutations of it, you know, but it was all the same thing. And I was just like, really? Another one?
Come on. Yeah, it becomes comedic after a while, but then you have to break through that, that humor, you know, that cosmic humor that happens where, you know, what does that mean to you? Why are all these scorpionic relationship driven people coming to you? What is the message for you as the diviner? Mm-hmm. And then how do you apply that to the grander picture of your experience?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. I think it's something that people, don't talk about very much, right? Like, how do you, and we're talking around it here, but maybe we'll bring it to the forefront a bit more, you know, how do you look at your day, week, and month of reading for people as a reading for you? How do you interpret that? What do you, is there anything that you kind of do around that? Do you keep track? Yeah. How do you do so?
Oh yeah. I have an altar. I have this wonderful altar. It's about 400 years old from Japan. It's a Shinto altar. And that is where my portal is for my client base, but also for myself. And so before every reading, I do a 5-card spread, which with whatever method of cards or charms or shells or bones I use. And that kind of informs me of what I might expect from the reading. And if that information comes up in the reading, I'll bring up what the altar communicated to me in the dialogue that I'm actually having with my client. And about 99% of the time, it's pretty accurate. And it mm-hmm. usually is helpful, you know, and I think that's what we're in it for.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. How about you? Do you do anything before readings?
Before readings? Mm-hmm. No. I sit around and drink coffee. I write. I whatever, you know. And then someone shows up and, you know, says, "Hey, can we go for a reading?" I'm like, "Yeah, let's go right now," you know, because I take walk-ins, right?
Yeah.
I
mean,
so in that sense, I don't have the opportunity, and often I'm, you know, again, because I just schedule whatever people schedule. You know what I mean? I'll often do readings back to back with no real transition time other than, you know, handshakes and smiles and come on in here, can I get you a coffee, okay, have a sit, let's go. So in that sense, I don't really do anything to kind of gear myself into it. I mean, my opening process is my opening process, which is just, you know, the way in which I pray and center myself, the way in which I, you know, in some ways the patter that I go through is 99% always the same before reading. Uh-huh. And that is part of the gateway into the process of reading for me, you know? So those two things together, I mean, along with having the altar with all my spiritual crew in the reading room, you know, I mean, the reading room that I read out of is always tuned up for me. Doesn't take much to get there.
Because
it's basically its own sacred space. So,
yeah, you know. I love the spontaneity that you have. You know, that's something I don't really have because I'm everything's scheduled, you know. Mm-hmm. I love that idea of people just walking in and, you know, who knows what's going to come through the door, right?
Well, sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not, right? You know, I mean, like I've had a few people that I was actually kind of scared of and things like that where I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, not a long time. I basically, you know, in the first place that I was working at, you know, I mean, there was this guy in and I was like, you know,
I don't know that he intended to show me his gun, but, you know, it was just like, I'm like, oh my God, you know, and he's there and I'm just like, oh, you know, and at the end of the reading, you know, basically the reading was what you would expect. How do I stop from going to jail? Right. You know, kind of thing. And I'm just like, well, you know, but first of all, you know, and at the end of the, at the end of the session with him, I said, you know, this whole thing makes me really uncomfortable. And to be honest, I'd really rather never see you again. And he was like, okay. And that was it. He never came back, you know? Oh. But, you know, so, I mean, there's that downside of it. And then there's also the, you know, there's always this sort of uncomfortable intersection around psychicness, spirituality, and mental illness, right? And, you know, so sometimes some people come in who I'm just like, there's nothing I can do to work with you, really, because, you know, first of all, maybe some, you know, occasionally I'm like, you're not even making sense, you know, like, I don't even understand what we're talking about here. It's never a good place to start a reading, you know, and other times I'm just like, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, whatever's going on with you, it's not spiritual, and I don't feel qualified to advise you around it, you know? So there's definitely sort of some of the stuff around boundaries that, as you say, like the gender stuff, right? You know, we're like straight guys and they're, you know. Yeah. Their inability to respect boundaries or listen or, you know, whatever, pick up cues, you know, a variety of those things are certainly kind of problematic, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it can be. Well, that's, it's kind of fascinating, you know, that you have to really be careful in your shop. I never really considered that, you know, just really like you could be in danger, right? It sounds like you are. You're really putting yourself. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's happening very much, but yeah, when it does.
Well, it hasn't happened in years, you know. I mean, it, basically, since I went out on my own, it doesn't really happen. The store where I used to work attracted more of that kind of clientele, and mm-hmm. and was sort of more. They were more of the opinion that anybody's money is as good as anybody else's money, you know? Huh. And for me, I'm like, you know what? If you're not kind and nice and trying to work on getting your life in order, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure I really want to work with you, you know?
Yeah.
So it goes back to that being really clear about who is the community that you want to have, right? Like, because whoever you agree to work with, or certainly in my life anyway, whoever I've agreed to work with, well, then they often send their friends who are often like them, right? So you just get more of the same, right?
So yes. It
doesn't surprise me that you get more and more artists, you know,
right.
Like
right.
It seems natural that it would go that way. So,
yeah, it does seem natural. And yet, it's so easy to, not pay attention. You know, I don't do that anymore. I'm actually quite, fascinated and intrigued by the idea of really setting out a prayer, you know, or an intention that, you know, I want to align with people who are going to show me how to live a more creative life and you know, kind of inspire me through the fact that they're actually following their calling. You know, that's what I'm in this for, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the inspiration that happens in those moments when you're in a reading and someone quite creative shows up and they find yet another level of creativity that inspires them to go out into the world and share that knowledge and that information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, there's just nothing like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm it's such an honor to be in that position.
Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
So I'm also curious, because we were kind of talking about it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
How do you look at the meta picture? How do you look at the meta lessons that come from the readings that you do in a month?
Can you repeat that? Because you just scratched out on me.
So, you know, you do a bunch of readings in a month, right?
Yeah.
And you're looking at them and seeing patterns of the whole, right?
Yeah.
Of the movement of your community or the intersection of you and all these people's lives and the divination. And there are these patterns that are there, right? How do you look at that? How do you think about that? How, you know, because I've certainly thought about that before, but it's not something that I've heard talked about really. And it's not something that I've ever really talked about with other people. So I'm curious, what, if any, suggestions or ideas might you have to help other people ponder that notion and start to embody a bit of that?
Yeah, I think that's the key word, is to embody it. You know, I try not to, I really try not to put too much description into certain experiences. And when a collective message comes out of like a month's worth of readings or a week's worth of readings or even a day, I just try to absorb it and embody it and see where it wants to take me. And usually the expression is nonverbal. Wherever it takes me, it's probably going to be a nonverbal expression. And so I'll find myself creating art or just being in meditation with it or planting a garden around it. You know, I try not to waste too much time verbalizing it. You know, I think, God, we're just in such a time where communication is just everywhere. Things are just being communicated on such a literal level, you know, that I would much rather, I do better, you know, I'm not much of a talker, obviously, and I do better when I can, like, look at things symbolically, you know, and see where that symbol is awakening some aspect of my spirit. You know, and once that awakening occurs, you know, I feel like I'm activated into physically doing something with it, you know, channeling it out and making something out of it. And it's usually that end piece that just wants to be appreciated. And most of my pieces are temporary also. You know, the mandalas that I build, they go away after they've been realized or self-actualized. Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It does. You know, I certainly relate to that notion that there's a certain feeling or, you know, a state of being in and sort of dropping in and out of that in the readings. And then recognizing whether that is, you know, let's pull a hippie word out for it, of the vibe that we want to, you know, do we want to be vibrating that or do we not, right? You know, and that the readings for me allow me to understand the pathways in and out of different kind of vibes and ways of being. And so that kind of nonverbal idea, that idea of like, you know what, I'm feeling myself sliding into something that I recognize from working with people or, you know, from sessions or whatever. And, you know, I don't want to be in this anymore. This isn't the state that I want to be in. And, you know, kind of shifting that vibration in that nonverbal way, I think is, I really resonate with that for sure.
One of the things that I like to do is, you know, once all the cards are out, and especially if people are in some form of crises, let's say, or conflict, where, you know, those cards are going to show up in the reading, right? And so what I have them do is pull out the cards that represent, you know, from the spread after it's all out on the table, remove the cards that represent the conflict. Just remove those out and put those aside. And the cards that are remaining are what really wants to happen. You know, that's the outcome. That's the reality that really wants to happen, that's missing out due to the fact that the conflict is kind of distracting them from the rest of the cards. And the cards are already set up. They're already there. You know, it means that it's probably available, but it's this conflict that kind of gets in the way, you know? And so just seeing that, you know, there doesn't have to be a lot of dialogue around that. And usually what I get to witness as a reader is the client looking at that and this kind of inner knowing just kind of shows up, you know, and it's an aha, definitely. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that, you know, it's more of like this realignment with where they really want to go, you know, but sometimes they're too afraid to go there. The conflict is easier sometimes, you know, you've heard all those stories.
Sure. Yeah.
But what the beauty of it is when, you know, you can just see that shift that you were talking about where they go from one extreme to this other place that isn't so much of an extreme, but will fuel their fire in a much cleaner way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely experienced that. I remember one reading where, and this happened a number of times, where we were talking about something. I'm like, so this is your bad behavior here, right?
Yeah.
This card is all the stuff that you know you shouldn't do, and yet you keep finding yourself doing it, you know? Right. And I'm like, you got it? And they're like, yep. I'm like, are you going to stop? They're like, yep. I'm like, all right, let's turn that card over and never speak of it again. You know, let's just get on with the rest of the reading. So, you know, we end up with this spread of, you know, because I use a lot of cards, right? You know, 15 or 20 cards. You know, all these cards except for one, which stays face down after we've spoke about it. Right? Like, we talked about what that card is. We know what it is, but we don't need to talk about it anymore. We're done. You're done. Let's focus on where you're going, you know?
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always like to actually look at those cards, you know, the cards that you don't like to talk about as the reaction,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the action is in the other cards, you know, the negative card, I guess you could call that, or the card of conflict is usually someone's reaction to the scenario that they're setting themselves up for.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other cards usually describe the action that wants to happen, so that they could remedy the reaction and
absolutely
and hopefully put an end to the patternistic activity that goes around that particular card often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The negative cards represent the attachment to the script and the other cards represent the liberation from the story.
Fantastic. I think you should write that down, Andrew. That's perfect. That's really well said. That says it mm-hmm. all.
Yeah. So how does tarot feature in your art and your creative life outside of doing readings and stuff, outside of the work that you're doing with people who are clients or clients or whatever for you?
It's all about the imagery.
Yeah.
It's all about the imagery and the story that happens in the imagery. And, you know, even the more abstract, like you and I were talking earlier about the pips that don't have people in them, let's put it that way, mm-hmm. like in the Marseille deck. And, you know, where you can go with that particular imagery and how it really kind of makes you hone in even more to a more abstract way of looking at the world. And following that and seeing where it goes. So for me, you know, it's really the artistic colors, the vibrations, the movement, the temperature, you know,
mm-hmm.
in every piece. And aren't we so fortunate as cardomancers to have all of these beautiful decks available to us? I mean, it's unbelievable.
We can buy
these little galleries in boxes, you know, at a really inexpensive price when you think about, you know, like I said, I look at the paintings cost, you know, and we have 78 experiences, you know, or 36 or whatever deck you choose to use,
mm-hmm.
of artistic expression that we can sit with and, you know, just be inspired by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite amazing, isn't it? You know,
yes.
I'm sitting here with, let's see, the Hermetic Tarot, the Gaian Tarot.
Is that the black and white one, the Hermetic one?
Yeah, the 1JJ Swiss, okay. Handel, Tarot of the Orishas, Sola Busca, the Curvus Marseille deck. I think that's all that's, and my Jungian Tarot. and a Toth deck, all within arm's reach of me.
I love the eclectic field that you have in front of you. I think that says a lot about you. You're very versatile. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really great. Yeah. I went on the Tarot Art History Tour that was hosted by Arnel Ando in Italy a few years back. And it was fantastic. You know, I used to live in Italy, but I never really experienced it on this level where you look at what inspired, you go through these museums and these different landscapes and you see what inspired the artist to create the imagery that you see, you know, on the early Italian decks.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that alchemically. I looked at that, you know, with the four levels of understanding. I looked at it, you know, as just a geeked out tarot person. You know?
I see the wheel.
Yeah, it was everywhere, you know.
Sure.
If you go to Siena to the Duomo there, and you see all these tarot cards on the marble floors, you know, it's just, and there's Hermes, you know, Trismegistus right there in the center of the floor, you know, you mm-hmm. think, well, and all these sibyls are on the floor too. You think, you know, this was in the consciousness of the sacred in that day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So seeing things artistically, you know, maybe I'm a slave to it. I don't know. I don't mind it, but it is hard to let go of. I don't know if I want to let go of it.
Why would you though? Right? I mean, you know, the presence of these things. You know, I was sitting in the subway station here in Toronto, you know, near my house, waiting for the subway. And, you know, the announcement comes on, due to a passenger assistance alarm, you will expect longer than normal waits, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, great. Thanks, man. You know, like, you know, look at my watch, look at the thing. Like, what am I going to do? I'm here underground waiting, right? And so I'm sitting and I'm looking at this post that's in front of me, the pillar that holds up the roof, basically, right? And, you know, they're all numbered all along the track, right? And the one that I was looking at was number 15, and it was black, like black tiled thing. And I'm like, all right, devil, what do you got to tell me today? Right. And so I sat there and I started looking at him, and then I started picturing the card. And then I started thinking about how the devil, how the unconscious, how the, you know, these sort of forces, these, you know, primal, you know, primordial forces that are uncontrollable and unacceptable and, you know, unwanted, all exist below ground. And yet, as I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm in Toronto, I'm in a major, major center, you know, and above me, there's like a 30-story tower for some company or a bunch of companies. Yes. And all of these things, right, in my mind became, you know, from the Starbucks above to the this, to the building, to all that stuff, they're all resting on top of this devil, right? They're all being supported by this thing, right? And I'm like, this is one of the things that the devil does for us, right? Uh-huh. You know, thanklessly often. But, you know, this card, it is that which supports our drive to reach upwards and to create and to, you know, to build and to procreate and to create and all these things. It can come from that place, right? Sure. And, you know, sitting there, you know, I just sort of sat there with that for a long time. So, you know, it's, I don't think that I'm a slave to the imagery of the cards. Mm-hmm. I think that the cards provide a language and a way of exploring relationships that can deepen and expand our metaphors and understanding of the nature of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's so right on. I don't have anything to add to that. That's perfect. It's true. You know, you just, they're always speaking to us. And my thing lately is, you know, I've been doing a lot of workshops and, you know, I'm just kind of looking at the whole world as one big divination experience like you just did. And, you know, the world is always communicating some kind of symbolic message to mm-hmm. us if we just look for it. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite forms of divination is, I've been calling it eavesdropping, but I guess that's not really the best thing to say. But, you know, if it's like the poor person's way of getting an answer, where you go into a crowded place, you put your question out there in the world, and you sit down and you just let the stream of information and dialogue that's going on around you come through one ear and out the other, and that's where your answer will show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's you know, there's so many opportunities to divine. You can make yourself crazy.
Well, that's definitely the important piece too, right? Where is the boundary or the borderline between your what is your delineated space where you're in that mode and where are you out of that mode, right?
Yeah.
You know, because
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because so many people
shut it off. You know, not everybody wants to hear about it.
Well, yeah. There's that, and you know, I think I sometimes drive my wife a little crazy because, you know, on Sunday she'll be like, "Hey, do you know blah blah blah?" I'm like, "No, I don't know." You know, like, I wouldn't know the answer. She's like, "Well, do you have a psychic feel about it?" I'm like, "It's Sunday. I don't have psychic feelings on Sunday." You know, it's like, "Well, I'm not working." You know what? I'll think about it later. You know, well, it's one of those things. You know, it's I went through a period of time where I struggled to shut it off, and that was not entertaining, not for me and not for anybody around me. I mean, maybe for somebody, but like for the most part, you know, like someone would say something, they'd be like, "Oh, you know, this is going to happen." And I would just turn and look at them and be like, "No, this is going to happen instead, or it's going to fail completely." And it would just be like, I was just so plugged into that source. Right. And
yeah.
I couldn't tell when I was thinking and when I was psychicking, and it didn't last very long, thank goodness, but it was not a good place to be and not entertaining for anybody around me, I don't think. So
well, that's the beauty of experience and time, that you know, the time that we put into our craft, right, is learning what works and what doesn't, and mm-hmm. not and you know, it really isn't for everybody, you know, and when you're so new to this, you kind of get high on it, that you want to share it with everybody because it's just so fantastic and interesting and, you know, helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's not true for everyone.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's not always appropriate either, even if it is true, okay. You know?
No.
Yeah. No.
You have to edit yourself for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody wants a reading.
Exactly. Can let them book your appointment, right? You know,
yeah.
Sign up, and then it's official, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, so if people are looking to catch up with you, or maybe to acquire one of your wonderful decks or oracles, where should they go and look for you?
They should like vibe me out. No, they should
Post it to the ether. Call up an angel.
That's all you do. Yeah. just go to my website, which is carrieparis.com. And
cool.
All of my shop is there. You can contact me there. You can find me on Facebook. You know, I'm pretty mm-hmm. approachable these days.
Yeah. And like we talked about, you know, you definitely have a lot of stuff going on that even if you don't want to get one of the oracles or one of the things, there's all sorts of great stuff that you can do with the spreadsheets and stuff like that, and just take your cards or print something off the internet or print off the you recently had a deck where you could print it yourself and stuff.
I made a couple of free decks. If you want a free deck, go to my website. There's two of them on there for you. They're mm-hmm. Lenormand decks, and then I also offer free casting sheets where you know you just print them out and cast away. And every month I offer a casting calendar. So, I make it really accessible and really easy. I hope I do. And then, you can approach me at conferences, too. That's where I really like going to these conferences. There's so many conferences now. It's amazing. I was telling somebody at a conference the other day. It's like, wow, you know, I'm seeing you people more than I see my own family. You know? Mm-hmm. This is amazing. But there's so many great topics out there. I want to see them all.
I was looking at a recent set of announcements and just being like, I don't even understand. Like, I think I need a map and a calendar at the same time to figure out, like, you know, some like little video of like what lights go on when conferences are at different times of the year in different parts of the country, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to be speaking at BATS, and Yoav Bendav and I are going to do a workshop together on August 3rd in San Francisco at Mission Alchemy. Mm-hmm. I'm actually doing my talk, my version of the talk on alchemy and the major arcana, and he's doing his on his style of reading with his beautiful Marseille deck. God, I love that deck.
And his style is wonderful, and his book, the open reading, is stunning for sure. I'm a huge fan.
It's in the top 10 tarot books on my bookshelf. I mean, that book is phenomenally great. Just get it, trust me. If you haven't got it, just go in.
And for beginners as well as for, you know, I mean, I've read so many books, and I read it, and it helped me understand and verbalize things that I was already doing in a structure that I hadn't actually put it together, and I couldn't express it. They gave me language for things that I thought and believed. I was like, that's exactly what I believed, and I hadn't gotten to the language for it yet. So it's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. I really love, and I know that Yoav isn't from Europe, but he spent a lot of time there. I really love that European style of reading the cards, because it is like an open conversation. You know, it's you put less, it's a more balanced relationship with European readers. There's less interest in a systematic way of doing a reading, and there's more conversation of just, you know, how can I help you? Let's look at this together. You know, it's really beautiful. So there's not a lot of power play involved, like, you know, you often get in the States or in Canada, I'm sure. But anyway, he really brings that to the table, and I admire that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had Yoav on here, I don't know, a while back. If you go and look at the podcast page,
I listened to
he
it,
was
yeah.
there for sure. So yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah, and then after that, I'm going to do TarotCon in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And the Pacific Northwest is having up their first conference in Portland. I'll be speaking at that. And I think that's it for 2014.
And then you're headlining Reader Studio next year.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Wow. Mm-hmm. What I'm more excited about is the fact that, you know, Ellen Lorenzo Prince, who I just adore. I love her deck.
Yeah.
All of her decks, actually. And her recent one, The Dark Goddess, is just fantastic. And then Teresa Reed, my God, you know, the Tarot Lady. Mm-hmm. The Tarot Lady. You know, we're going to be sharing that.
That's going to be wonderful.
Together. Yeah. Are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to that. I love seeing you at conferences. We shared a table together once.
We did. Definitely. It was wonderful.
Yeah. It was
cool. All right. Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
I love the organic. I know nobody's going to see this, but, you know, you and I are seeing each other through Skype, and I can see somebody shopping in your shop, and I see the eclectic, you know, collection of really cool stuff you have in there. I just want to go shopping.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll have to find a reason to get you up to Toronto for sure.
Sounds good to me. Thanks All so right. much, Andrew. You Thank take you. Care.
Okay, bye.
Ciao.
So certainly do go check out Carrie Paris's work at carrieparis.com, and please do check out what I'm up to and stay in touch for these podcasts and other things. And one of the best things that you could do to stay in touch is go jump on my mailing list. You get my free book on reading tarot, and every other week you get access to some ideas on reading the cards. Basically, I write stories about things that I'm seeing going on with my clientele and in my life, and I am developing ways to turn those into a way of building a deeper relationship with the cards or your meditation practice. So you can certainly find that out at thehermitslamp.com. Right on the front there it says, get my free book, and if you click on that and pop in your email, all of those wonderful things will come to you. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.